I'm Matthew Petty, and this is Intersection. One month after voters went to the polls in the hotly contested 2000 US presidential election, the Florida Supreme Court ordered a statewide manual recount of votes. Just one day later, the US Supreme Court overturned that decision, ensuring the election of Republican George W. Bush as the 43rd President of the United States and ending the presidential hopes of his rival, sitting Vice President and Democrat Al Gore. I'll talk to former Florida Supreme Court Chief Justice Charles Wells about his new book, Inside Bush v. Gore, an account from inside the chambers of the court where Wells and his fellow justices worked to resolve the election, grappling with ballot problems like hanging chads, dimpled chads and absentee ballots, and problems with the state's election laws. That's ahead on Intersection. I'm joined in the studio by retired Florida Supreme Court Chief Justice Charles Wells. He was Chief Justice of the Florida Supreme Court from July 2000 to June 2002, most notably during the 2000 election debacle here in Florida, and his new book, Bush v. Gore, tells the story of the Florida election contest from inside the chambers of the Florida Supreme Court. Justice Wells, thank you very much for joining me.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here.
What was your motivation to write this book now, more than a decade after that election?
I retired from the court in March of 2009. I had decided that the 2000 election controversy in Florida had gotten so much adverse publicity across the country and really throughout the world that I wanted to add my perspective on what had happened during that controversy for purposes of history and for purposes of trying to educate the public, students, and law students as to the problems that we had and that we confronted and how the cases were processed.
Is it fair to call it a debacle, or is that a little too strong?
Well, I don't think it was a debacle as people have labeled it from the standpoint that it was something that happened after the fact that turned it into some type of fraudulent exercise. It was a debacle from the standpoint that we had statutes which were in conflict and which really, in the stress of that election, didn't work well in allowing us to continue to count votes. And it was also a problem in that we had a form of a ballot that should not have been used.
And this is the physical form of the ballot.
That was the physical form of the punch card ballot. Mm-hmm. There had already been, prior to the 2000 election, in several states, election contest and issues arising out of whether those ballots could be usually properly punched in order to get an accurate machine count. Mm-hmm. And that turned out to be as central a problem in this very, very close election as any problem that we had.
What was happening, you know, in the days after the election? You talk in your book about going to sleep and thinking that things would be resolved in the morning you woke up, and that was not the case.
Well, as I say in the book, you know, I cast my vote on November the 7th. I'd heard leading up to it that Florida was going to be very close. I kind of questioned that because I'd been voting in Florida since 1960. And throughout that period of time, Florida had leaned in presidential elections toward the Republican candidate. But that was the forecast and was very close nationally. When the election returns began to come in, the networks, the three major networks were, and plus CNN, were saying that at one point they said that Bush had carried Florida, then they withdrew that, and then they said Gore had carried Florida. And they attempted, though, to call the election for Gore before the polls closed in the Florida Panhandle. And I knew that was a problem. But at any rate, my wife Linda and I went to go to sleep, woke up around 2 o'clock, and Linda was listening to it on the radio. And she said, now they've called it for Bush. And I said, well, how many votes separate him? And she said, 1,800. You know, I thought to myself, like the astronauts on Apollo 13, Houston, we got a problem here, because that was far too close. And then quickly the next day, the newspaper headlines were too close to call, and it just unfolded very rapidly that we were going to have litigation and controversies in Florida.
At what point did you realize that you and your fellow justices on the Supreme Court were going to have to take a central role in resolving it?
Well, I think by the afternoon of the 8th, it became apparent that there were going to be cases filed. First type of controversy that arose was something that was known at that time and unknown to me until I heard the phrase or read the phrase, the butterfly ballot, and that was down in Palm Beach County, and it had already fluttered to the surface by the afternoon of November the 8th, and there were people that were threatening to file suit. I knew that once it got into litigation that it was going to head toward the Florida Supreme Court.
You write in this book about a tent city springing up in front of the courthouse, and that must have been quite an unusual experience. What was it like trying to resolve this election and having the court's deliberations played out on the world media stage?
Well, what was striking was that almost immediately after the election, the election was on Tuesday, the controversies began to arise Wednesday. I left to go to the University of Florida homecoming in Gainesville on Friday. When I left, there was really nothing much going on outside the court by that time. By the time I got back Sunday, there were three blocks of satellite trucks from TV stations that were organized across the street from the court. A news agency had set up a tent on the lawn of the Florida Supreme Court, which we had to have them move it. But then by that Monday and Tuesday, there was a regular tent city that had been built up just by the national and international press on the steps of the Capitol, which are immediately across from the Florida Supreme Court. And that was very striking. And had sprung up by that time crowds of several hundred people all day outside the court. And that was just something that was highly unusual for the Florida Supreme Court.
How did you and your fellow justices go forward with that spotlight on you?
Well, we recognized that we had to begin to concentrate mainly on this presidential election controversy and the cases that were coming to us. So we began meeting and having conferences on a daily basis. But it was my role as the Chief Justice to work on the administrative side of the court. We went from having emails on the day of the election of about 2,000 emails to on the Friday after the election of getting 2 million emails. And so there was a tremendous amount of administrative pressure that immediately came to bear on the court, and that came within my responsibilities. We didn't ever have any violence outside the court, and I think it was in large measure due to the efforts of the marshal and his staff because of the manner in which they dealt with these large crowds.
So in addition to the media, there are also lots of spectators, people with an interest one way or the other.
There was people who were demonstrating on a regular basis all day long outside the court. There were people in clown costumes, obviously, trying to depict that they thought that what was going inside the court was a circus. I remember looking out. But the chief's office is right above where these crowds were gathering. And I remember looking out, and there was a lady who had a skunk on a leash. And she could do a lot of tricks with that skunk. I thought to myself, you know, they're having a lot more fun out there on the street than I am having in here.
Mm-hmm.
And but that was something that was constant for the whole 36 days, really beginning on Friday. So it was about 33 days in which we always had these large crowds.
I'm speaking with retired Florida Supreme Court Chief Justice Charlie Wells. He was Chief Justice of the Florida Supreme Court from July 2000 to June 2002, and most notably during the 2000 election in Florida. And his new book, Bush v. Gore, details the story of the Florida election contest from inside the chambers of the Florida Supreme Court. I'm Matthew Petty, and you're listening to Intersection on 90.7 WMFE-FM. You can join the conversation online by emailing us at intersection@wmfe.org, on Facebook, and on Twitter. Now, on December 8th, 2000, your court ruled on a statewide manual recount 4-3. You were in dissent from the majority opinion. Why is that?
What has to be understood about the process in Florida is that there is a two-phased process set up by the statutory procedures. The first part was a protest phase, and that was, we heard argument as to whether counting should continue. We heard oral argument in the case twice. The first time was on the Monday before Thanksgiving of 2000. We issued an opinion the next day. We worked all day and all day the next day, and collectively came to a unanimous opinion which extended the counting and this protest period through Sunday after Thanksgiving. But thereafter, Bush was certified to be the winner. Now, thereafter, after our first case, the United States Supreme Court stepped in, granted a review of that case, and they were hearing an argument in the case. But there was a second phase, and that was the contest phase. That proceeded after the first part of the case until December the 8th. Now, by December the 8th, I knew that this case had to get over. It had to end by December the 12th in order for all of Florida's votes to be protected. But the majority on our court came to the conclusion on December the 8th saying that they were going to order a manual recount of in all counties where there had been undervotes on these punch card ballots. Well, that wasn't going to work, in my judgment. And so at that point, we broke in our court from a unanimous court to 4-3. I wrote a dissent in which I really urged, essentially, the United States Supreme Court to come in. The United States Supreme Court did come in, and then they stayed the recount and ultimately issued the final opinion in the case.
And you think a manual recount wouldn't have helped because it would just be a matter of opinion on whether the vote was one way or the other?
Well, it wouldn't have helped because we didn't, in my judgment, have any standards by which those manual recounts could be done.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reason it wouldn't have worked is because I don't think we would have had a reliable count, and because By December the 7th, I was convinced through this process that this election was so close that it was essentially a tie, and that the margin of error was always going to exceed the margin of victory.
And so it all comes back to those vexed ballots.
What we found was these punch card ballots, because there was a problem with how those were punched and whether they were punched all the way out or not. And they came in the language known as dimple chads, hanging chads, pregnant chads. There were all sorts of these labels that were placed on this, but that all meant that there was some mark on this ballot, but it wasn't a sufficient mark where the machines could count the ballots or did count the ballots. And so there were a lot of undervotes, meaning that people had voted and for other elections for sheriffs and county commissions, and but on the same ballot they hadn't voted for president.
Right.
And so it was considered that there was a likelihood that they would have voted for president, but that vote had to be counted. But how you determine whether the, who they intended to vote for needed to have some standard by which you made that judgment, the people do, that would do the recounting. And there was no procedure for doing that. And I felt like that it would just could not be fairly done after the fact.
Looking back, do you feel like you're comfortable you made the right decision there, or do you think the majority justices were right?
I'm still confident that that's what had to happen. At that point in time, the election had to be decided.
Now, having said that, you acknowledge in your book that some people, particularly supporters of Vice President Al Gore, feel like that 36-day period was too short, and they feel that things weren't really resolved.
And I acknowledge that there is a lot of dissatisfaction with the results, and I can certainly sympathize with that dissatisfaction. But in the end, elections have to be decided, and it's absolutely the bedrock essential principle of the American democratic government that there be a peaceful passing of the power of the presidency on a periodic basis. And that had to be done. And so in the final analysis, courts have to make decisions. And so that is the reason I felt like that when we get to at the point in the process at which it became apparent that the decision had to be made, that we had to just recognize that who had, was ahead in the vote at that point in time was going to be the winner.
Charlie Wells, I want to ask you about your early career. Now, you talk about the start of your career as a justice and some of the goals you had, including building a stronger relationship between the judicial and the legislative branch of government in Florida. Now, did this help you as the recount went on?
I had felt and still feel that one of the essential parts of being a member of the Florida Supreme Court is that to recognize that the court is a part of state government and that there has to be a respect by the court for the role of the other two branches of government. And I tried, in the opinions that I wrote and the work that I did, to evidence the fact that I did have a deep feeling that separation of powers and respect for the other branches was important. But there was tension, and I think that didn't help us during this particular process.
What about now? Do you feel like there is still some element of tension between those different branches of government since you've left the Supreme Court?
I think there is. I think that actually the most immediate past session of the legislature, that some of that was smoothed over, although we may go through another period now that there has been some legislative attempts to reform the processing of capital cases.
Let me ask you, too, what do you make of the recent attempt by the state GOP to oust Florida Supreme Court Justices Louis Pariente and Quince? And obviously these were colleagues of yours in the Supreme Court. Even some prominent Republicans like lawyer Bob Martinez was quoted as saying it was a dangerous precedent because it undermined the public's faith in the judiciary. Do you agree with that?
Well, you know, that election has now been held, and I think I'm not personally of the view that there shouldn't be contest in these retention elections. I think people need to have input. So the fact that there was some campaigns that were waged, I don't think was necessarily a bad thing. But I'm sympathetic to the view that it's very hard for members of the court to defend themselves against purely political attacks. And so I don't think those attacks are really helpful when it's just purely a partisan type of an attack. Now, One of the things that I think that we've got to continue to work on is the selection of judges, because it's probably the best system that's been devised to not have direct election of judges and have retention elections. But it still means that the public needs to have input. And so there needs to be an avenue by which the public can have some input in the way that they believe the courts are being run.
Do you feel like the public's well educated enough on what the court's doing, though, to make informed decisions about that?
I think that's a real problem, and I think that now we have taken one positive step, although I don't believe that the general public takes advantage of it. But we have a positive step in Florida in that the proceedings of the appellate courts, of particularly the Florida Supreme Court, are on television, and so they're available for people to watch. But I hope, and one of the reasons that I was interested in writing this book is to interest people in trying to examine how the Supreme Court works, because there really isn't any more powerful institution in government than a court of last resort. After all, when you think about it, Florida Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court at the federal level, can hold unconstitution and essentially a nullity what the legislature does and what the governor does, mm-hmm. or what the president does. And so though it's a powerful position for the courts to be in, and people need to understand how the courts work and who's doing making those decisions. And the only way to do it is for the public to inform itself continually on how courts work.
Mm-hmm. Now, can you talk a little bit about what the United States Supreme Court, what their decision was? Their ruling when they suspended the recount and awarded the presidency to George Bush was, their ruling was limited to the present circumstances, and that meant it wouldn't be applied after Bush v. Gore. Was that a first for the Supreme Court?
Well, this was a unique case for the United States Supreme Court, and I think that it is not the usual that the United States Supreme Court says that this decision is not to be used as precedent. However, in my view, what we needed at that point in time was a decision. And to me, it was far more important for the country for the United States Supreme Court to issue a decision than the reasons that it gave for the decision because mm-hmm. of the timing of it. Now, I know that Justice O'Connor has recently made some statements about questioning whether the United States Supreme Court should have become involved in mm-hmm. Bush v. Gore. I agree with her in part in that I thought that the United States Supreme Court came in too early in the case. They came in right after our first opinion. We were only at the halftime, and it was unusual, and they made a mistake in coming in at that point in time. However, at the end, I thought they needed to come in because, as I just said, I thought we had reached a point at which the process was not going to be any more accurate in determining who the winner was, and that we needed to have a decision, and that the final decision was always going to have to be made by the United States Supreme Court.
Now, just as some people didn't like the outcome of that decision for political reasons, there were also some legal scholars who disagreed with it. Some have called it the single most corrupt decision in Supreme Court history. What do you think of a statement like that?
I do not agree with that at all. I think that that ignores the reality of what was at the bottom of the controversy. Now, I think that it also does not take into account the processing of the cases for the period of time in which they've been processed and the need to get a resolution of this controversy within the 36-day period And one of the things that those who have criticized the United States Supreme Court in that way, I think, fail to take into consideration is that both Vice President Gore and Governor Bush's lawyers agreed at the time that we had the first argument in our case, and I asked them the specific question, and they gave the specific answer, that in order for Florida's votes not to be prejudiced, that the controversy had to end by December the 12th. And that was a date which the parties agreed it needed to be ended. And so we were at the time that the Supreme Court ended it, we were at December the 12th.
Mm-hmm. Now, Florida was in the spotlight again last November because of long lines at the voting booths and stories of some people saying they weren't able to vote. Do you feel like Florida gets more scrutiny for these kinds of technical hiccups because of what happened with the Bush v. Gore decision?
Well, I think that's part of it. I think Florida also gets more scrutiny because it's now the third largest state in the country and it has such a diverse population.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that impressed me during the 15 years I was on the court and what happened during that period was that almost every political controversy that affected the country is in Florida. And the reason for that is that we've had a Republican legislature and we've had a Republican governor. And they pass items that would fit within their agenda, and they're immediately taken to court by the Democrats. And so it comes to the Florida Supreme Court in one form or the other. And so we have faced decisions on parental notification, on charter schools, on the death penalty, on just all of the hot-button issues. And so that brings more spotlight on what we do in Florida.
What's the next big political controversy you think is going to roil Florida?
Well, you know, I think that there are a lot of different matters that Florida has to deal with. I think that as significant as any problems that Florida has are environmental problems. We are a state which is going to be impacted by the rising seas, impacted increasingly by hurricanes and storms, and we're going to, if we don't do some remedial work, we're going to have a lot of water problems in Florida. And so to me, because of the growth of this state and the almost unbelievable expansion of our population, Florida is going to have to tend to the environment.
I've been speaking in the studio with retired Florida Supreme Court Chief Justice Charlie Wells. He was Chief Justice of the Florida Supreme Court during the 2000 election. And his new book, Bush v. Gore, tells the story of the Florida election contest. Thank you so much for speaking to me.
It's been my pleasure.
The conversation about what's happening in Florida continues online at wmfe.org/intersection. There you can also sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Brendan Byrne is assistant producer. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.